Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 143. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is good old Nemmy Cakes, Pete Machad.
Aye, aye, Chris.
You a pirate this week?
Aye, aye, Hoffman.
Pete is apparently a pirate this week. I don't know why he's a pirate, but regardless, we are here and we are ready once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. So we've got some new game impressions to deliver, we have a little bit of news to discuss, and then we have this week's big topic, which is going to be our most wanted Nintendo TV and movies.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a pirate anymore.
That's good to know, Pete. However, before we get to that, let us kick things off by talking about some new releases, and let us start with the RPG that came out on Switch last week. That would be Octopath Traveler.
Ooh.
Obviously, this is the new RPG published by Nintendo, and the main draw is its 8 different characters with separate but intertwining storylines. Each character also has unique abilities that are used both in and out of battle. Pete, have you been playing this? And if so, what are your initial impressions? And also, which character did you start with?
Yeah, Chris, I've been playing the game, and I jumped into it with Cyrus.
Cyrus, the scholar with the scrutinize ability. All right, cool. How's that treating you so far?
Good. I'd like to scrutinize you sometimes.
Oh, I'll bet you would. I usually charge good money for that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Chris, I've only scratched the surface of this game. I can tell that it is dauntingly long, but I'm really compelled to play this RPG, mainly because of the graphics and the storyline. And I gotta be honest, the music is amazing.
Yeah, the music is pretty darn good. And I also really, really like that graphical style. Yeah, it has this really neat, fantastic 16-bit style, you know, pop-up book look, sort of. I mean, it is, you know, kind of dark, and I'll be honest, you know, some of the darkness and blur effects, you know, kind of make my eyes feel tired after a while. But I still, you know, love this, like, you know, modern take on the 16-bit visuals. And it is a really, really fantastic looking game if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, and then even some of the minor details, I mean, not so minor, but like the, you know, the voiceover work is pretty cool on some of the conversations.
Interesting you would say that. You know, that would actually be one of my few complaints I have about the game so far. Now, I think that the main characters are all really good. I haven't gotten any complaints about those so far. Not that I've met all the main characters yet, but I generally do like the main character voices. But a few of the minor NPCs and especially children are like really bad. Like, this is the first time I remember playing a game in a long time where I hear the voices and I'm just like, wow, these are just outright awful.
That's not good.
Like, I don't know, maybe you haven't got to any of these scenes yet. I think I first encountered one with Ophelia, but there's this one character she encounters. It's a child. I think this lost child, you're like trying to reunite the kid with his parent. And it's supposed to be like an 8 or 9 year old kid, but it sounds like someone who's like 22.
What?
And that tends to be the case with like all the children I've encountered so far. Like, they sound like adults pretending to be children, but not very well. And there are even like some flashback scenes where certain characters are kids after you've met them as an adult, and they still have their adult voices. So, you know, it's like everybody is Yugi from Yu-Gi-Oh! It's ridiculous. So, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that you brought that up, because that is like my one complaint about the game, is that despite the main voices being great, I found that some of them were just plain awful. You know, on the plus side, I think you can switch to Japanese voices anytime, so you can't really tell if the voices are bad. But, yeah, that's like my one complaint, the one flying the ointment I've encountered so far.
Well, have you talked to a lot of children in real life lately?
Do they all sound like they're 25 as well?
I don't know. Lately, I mean, I probably haven't talked to a kid in a while, but yeah, maybe.
Okay, fair enough. So what drew you to Cyrus the Scholar?
This is going to sound ridiculous, and I already can attest to that, but there was an email that went out announcing the fact that this game had launched. It's now available on Switch.
An email from Nintendo?
Yes, an official email from Nintendo.
Okay, I think I got that too.
In that email, they actually talk about the percentage of people who played through which character, and it had, like, Cyrus had the most with, like, 38%.
Really?
And I thought, you know, it's like almost like choosing a lifeline. So I went with that.
Huh. Very interesting. Now, I didn't see that email, so I didn't know about that, but I also chose to start with Cyrus.
Oh, no.
Which is a strange coincidence. Yeah. And I don't know, I just thought there was something interesting about him being a scholar, not being your typical warrior or wizard or anything like that. So I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Although he does have, you know, magic spells that are, you know, very much like a typical mage. But the thing I end up really liking about him is he has this scrutinize ability. That is his path action.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, like every NPC you encounter, you sort of like pull a Sherlock Holmes on them and observe them. And then you're like, you know, Eureka, I have found out all this person's secrets. And, you know, it's kind of doesn't really make that much sense that he can discern this much information about a person by just barely seeing them. But I thought it was pretty cool. And it gives you lots of useful information in the game, too.
Yeah, it really does. It almost reminded me of, do you remember Golden Sun and being able to read people's thoughts?
I've kind of forgotten about that, to be honest.
Well, there was this feature in Golden Sun where not only could you talk to everyone, but you could also just walk up and like read their thoughts.
Oh, okay.
And I was obsessed with reading all dialogue from that game.
Mm-hmm.
And the scrutinize ability kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Which
that
is actually
sense.
A good thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
It also feels a little like Ace Attorney or something, right? Like, or Leighton, maybe?
I guess, in the way that you're sort of, you know, discerning secrets like that. Yeah, it's sort of like, take that, I know the truth.
Yeah, and I like how every time he goes to scrutinize, he, like, whips his cape or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Whoosh!
So yeah, he is definitely a fun character. Then after that, I moved on to Ophelia, who is the cleric. And, you know, her story wasn't quite as interesting to me as Cyrus, but she has the guide ability, and so she's able to make NPCs follow her and basically do her bidding. You can solve some little side quests that way, and you can also have them get pulled into battle and be used as an assist a certain amount of times. You know, if you use them too many times, they'll run off, but it can be an important part of turning battles in your favor. And then from there, I went on and had Hannet join my party. She is the huntress, and she can provoke people into a fight, although she has these beast companions, and that's her main way of battling NPCs when she just provokes them into a fight like this. It's not her regular weapons. It's having her giant pet leopard maul people, which is kind of awesome and hilarious.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, you could put it that way. And then after that, I went on to play as the thief, Therion, and unsurprisingly, he can pickpocket people and is just able to steal goods left and right from characters all over the place.
I think they call that pilfer.
Steal. They're just straight up calling it steal, I believe. But yeah, I was hoping that I would have got through all 8 characters' prologues by now, but that just didn't happen. I got too busy with other things, unfortunately. I was only able to play through these 4, but I am definitely eager to move along and see the other characters, you know, try out their abilities and, you know, check out all of their stories as well.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what this game has to offer. And I'm curious how, like, they all kind of cross paths. I know that it's not, from what I've seen online, it's not necessarily the most robust part of the game, that, you know, the part where they actually kind of interact. But I think the idea is really cool, and I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, me too. I mean, so far, even when you have these other characters joining up for another character's story, sometimes those other main characters, like, don't even really appear, and it just focuses on the one character. But yeah, I am interested in everyone's story I've seen so far, and I am interested in seeing how it all unfolds.
Again, I just have to say the presentation is just off the charts. It almost makes me just kind of wish, and I know you'd probably think this is sacrilege, but it almost makes me wish that, you know, I could, like, they'd remake a one of the Final Fantasies in this style.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I would love to see them do that, remake Final Fantasy 4 or 5 or especially 6 like this. I think that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, I think. But we'll see. I mean, it seems to be well-received. I don't know if you've heard, but it's like, I guess it's basically sold out everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even, I guess, Square Enix released an official apology via their Twitter, you know, apologizing that they underestimated how many people were going to buy this game.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool. Glad to see people are really into it.
Yeah. Yeah, so bring back the JRPGs, 8-bit, 16-bit style.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that sends a big message to them, because I know, like, with all their Final Fantasy stuff, they're like, oh, no more turn-based RPGs. We want our stuff to all be, you know, really super modern action real-time battles. And, you know, hopefully this is like, yes, there is totally still room for stuff that's like, you know, classic Final Fantasy. I think that's why people are eating it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing that I really like about the game, aside from that fantastic presentation and the various characters and abilities, is that it has a really fun, engaging battle system. You know, I don't know if in the time you've played, you've had a chance to do a whole lot of fighting yet, but I love the fact that each battle really makes you think. You can't just button mash your way through it, because you really have to exploit those weaknesses, cause it to break or stun the enemies, and then you can really let them have it. But if you don't do that, the battles can be really drawn out, and the tide, you know, will kind of not be in your favor. So, yeah, it's a really cool aspect that keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, in the original demo, I played a lot of the fighting, and I enjoyed it. I'm curious to see how, you know, if it's changed at all. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Bravely Default, which is a compliment.
Yeah, and I believe it's the same dev team.
Yeah, and even perhaps a little bit more refined, because I think there were some elements of Bravely Default I didn't love, but I remember them being a little bit more addressed in this game.
Yeah, there are definite similarities, and it really hasn't changed too much from that first demo that came out like almost a year ago. Mm-hmm. The main thing is that, you know, as you get more party members, you're going to have a lot more complexity going on. You're going to be fighting bigger crews of enemies, so you'll have just a lot more things to think about and deal with, but also you'll have a lot more options at your disposal. So, you know, it so far is working out pretty well. It hasn't gotten, you know, too overly complicated or anything with just four party members at this point.
Yeah, I would say anyone who's on the fence about this game, there is a new demo. You know, I think it came out around the E3 timing.
Right.
And you can download that, play it, and then even your save file will carry over to when you buy the game.
Yes.
So there's really no reason not to try it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally recommend doing that. That's how I started. I played through with Cyrus and Ophelia in the demo, and then I transferred over my full progress to the main game, and that's when I did Hannet and Therion. I should mention, though, you know, some of the difficulty is kind of all over the place. Like, I had no problem with the first couple characters, but when I got to Hannet's story, it kind of kicked my butt. Like,
it handed it to you?
Or you could say it handed it to me. But yeah, the boss in her prologue story just had, you know, tons of hit points, and, you know, had this one attack that would hit like 5 or 6 times for like 100 damage with each hit. And my characters each only had like 450 HP, so, you know, he could like totally wipe out my team really, really fast. So, you know, I had to go and grind a whole bunch to be able to really take him out. Yeah, it took like an hour of grinding. But, you know, that's part of the charm of these old-school style RPGs, I think.
Yeah, I've noticed that even in, like, you know, some of the first enemies you encounter, you just, like, get wailed on to the point where you're, like, a hit away from dying.
Well, other than this boss, I really haven't had too much trouble yet. But, yeah, you really have to exploit those weaknesses. Otherwise, you can get in a situation like that. It's totally true.
Yeah, it's not like the old-school RPGs where you would just, like, you know, encounter, like, 100 things you could kill in one hit.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Anyway, there's still a lot more that I'd like to see in this game. I wish I'd been able to spend more time with it. I've only probably played about, you know, 8 hours so far. But yeah, I am really enjoying it. Can't wait to get back to it. Really looking forward to seeing what the other characters are like. So far, it's really, really fun.
Yeah, I'm even playing it right now.
All right. Of course, the other major Switch release that came out last Friday on the same day as Octopath Traveler was the new version of Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, which was released on 3DS as well. Pete, did you happen to pick this version up?
I haven't, but it's not because I won't play it. I really want to buy it. I just haven't had the time.
Yeah, for me, it's more that I don't have the money. But yeah, it is a really good game. It is Captain Toad. It is what it is. It's very much like the Wii U version, so if you've played that, you know exactly what to expect. It is a puzzle. I mean, it's a platformer, even though you can't jump, but, you know, you walk and run and climb and pull and, of course, collect all that treasure. But ultimately, you are solving these level-based puzzles to reach the goal in each stage and occasionally engage in a boss battle.
Yeah, now, I have played the demo of this. I did play that.
Right, and as we discussed on the show not long ago, the demo unfortunately does not have any of the new stages in it, and that's kind of the main draw for people who already played through it on Wii U.
Right.
So even though I haven't bought the game yet, I did go over to a friend's house, and I got to try out some of these new levels.
Oh, cool. What did you think?
Yeah, they're all based on Super Mario Odyssey, of course, and they are definitely fun. The first one was based on the Tosterina Desert area.
Oh, cool.
And that one wasn't, you know, super crazy innovative or anything, but it was definitely a fun stage. After that, there was a minecart ride in the Fossil Waterfall area, which was a beautiful level, but, you know, the fact that I don't think you could really lose that level kind of left me feeling a little bit empty. And then the third stage is New Donk City, and that was certainly my favorite of the three new stages I played so far.
Oh, cool.
You know, it had some pretty complex puzzles, has some pretty challenging enemies, and of course, because it's like skyscrapers and stuff, the stage is really, really vertical, and so it was a whole lot of fun.
I can imagine.
There are additional Mario Odyssey-based stages in addition to these. I believe the next one is set in the food world, but you know, so far, I'm really enjoying these new levels. Would I say they're actually enough to compel me to buy the game all over again for $40? I don't think so. Not just yet. Like I said, I'm a little bit short on funds at the moment, but I would like to add to my collection eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. You know, I played through it on Wii U. Can't remember if I finished it. I don't think I got all the way through it, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't finish the third book, but I got pretty close to the end of it.
Yeah, so I think for that asking price, you know, it's reasonable, but I still think maybe it's a little bit high. I think for me, if it was 30, I might have already picked it up.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, in general, you know, I love that it's on Switch now, and anybody who has not played it, because I know a lot of you didn't own a Wii U, this is the time to pick it up. It's a great game.
Yes, I think that is the bottom line. If you have not played this for, you absolutely should get it. You know, as I mentioned previously, you know, it does have this weird cursor on the screen if you're playing in docked mode, and that can be, you know, a little bit of an issue because it's just not as responsive as being able to reach down to that bottom screen if you're playing on 3DS and tap the interactive elements, you know, or, you know, reach down on the gamepad and touch the interactive elements. So that is something you'll have to adapt to a little bit. But that aside, yeah, it's a fantastic version of the game. It's excellent on both 3DS and Switch. And like we said, if you have not played it before, it is absolutely recommended purchase.
Absolutely.
Moving on to another new release. Pete, I'm sure this is one that you have been waiting for just based on the title alone. And that is Bomb Chicken.
Nope, but this sounds right up your alley.
Well, I do enjoy bombs, and I do enjoy chickens, and I do enjoy a good, fun puzzle platformer, which is exactly what this game is. You play as a chicken who can't jump. You know, as I say this, it kind of reminds me of, you know, Captain Toad in some ways, because they're both puzzle platformers, they both can't jump. But in this case, the bomb chicken, he can lay eggs, or she can lay eggs. I guess it's a chicken, so it's a she. She can, except they aren't eggs, they are bombs. So she like lays an infinite number of bombs that you can use to elevate you up onto high platforms, that you can also push them so they're used as weapons, and that way they can destroy enemies or they can activate switches, and of course you can use them to blow up obstacles that are in your path, naturally.
Now this was showcased in one of the Nintendo Directs, right?
It was shown at one of the Nindie showcases, as they call them, earlier this year, yes. So, you know, it was definitely on a lot of people's radar because of that, and I'm happy to say that, you know, so far it is living up to, you know, that level of hype.
Yeah, and I really like the aesthetic of this game. Does it hold up well?
Yeah, it does. It has a really nice pixel art graphical style, and that's also got, you know, good puzzles, surprisingly fluid movement. A lot of times in, you know, puzzle platform games like this, you kind of expect the characters to be a little stiff. I mean, maybe even Captain Toad is a little bit stiff, but you know, the movement for this bomb chicken is actually really, really responsive. Plus, the game has a good sense of humor on top of that.
Well, a game like with the name Bomb Chicken kind of tells you that.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, it's got this whole backstory about, you know, some crazy evil fast food corporation, some, you know, parody of KFC, and somehow like their special sauce gets onto the chicken, and that's why it has the ability to lay bombs for eggs. It's pretty crazy and wacky.
You got to put the special sauce on after the chicken's dead, not before.
That's right. That is the lesson to be learned from this game. The other lesson to be learned is, you know, your own bombs explode and kill you. So as you're laying, you know, this big stack of bombs, you have to make sure you get away before they explode and cook your bird, so to speak.
Yeah, just like in real life.
Yes, but you know, there are lots of environmental hazards to negotiate, like conveyor belts and spikes. And you know, I'm not super far into it, but yeah, so far it's coming together very, very well.
Cool. I just started realizing with Octopath, Captain Toad, and Bomb Chicken, these are all games you can't jump.
I guess that's true. No jumping allowed this week. Very, very correct.
Another observation I have is I think you've actually found a way to play every single game on a Nintendo platform with the name Chicken in it. Did you confirm that?
You know, I'm trying. You know, it is interesting that you know, the folks over at Atui made a game called Bomb Monkey and also made Chicken Wiggle. And now there's this game from a completely different publisher. It's like took the two ideas, combined them together, and we got Bomb Chicken. So very interesting.
Right. We're starting to get to a point where indie games, you could just take two words and put them together and voila. Shovel Knight.
Well, how can you go wrong when the two words are bomb and chicken, you know?
You really can't.
My one complaint about the game, and this is a very, very minor complaint, is that it really doesn't seem to have a very satisfying sense of progression. Like, there's nothing that says, you know, congratulations when you clear a level. There's nothing that says, you know, like, round start when you start a new level. And, you know, that's really not a big thing. But I think it would have had, like, just this little extra nice sense of accomplishment. Like, you know, I played through the first four levels in a row without realizing I was actually, you know, making progress. I'm like, man, I'm still in the first level. I'm not getting anywhere. And then I, like, you know, pause the game. It's like, you're on stage four. I'm like, oh, well, that's nice.
That's so random.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that one little thing that, you know, I wish had been in there. But it doesn't change how good and fun and enjoyable the game seems to be so far. Yeah, like I said, I still have a lot more to play. I'm not terribly far yet, but it totally seems worth my $15 thus far.
Awesome. Would you recommend I play it?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't think you can go wrong with a bomb-laying chicken. Of course, there were also some new Nintendo releases that came out last week that were not actually games. We now have some brand new Amiibo.
Amiibo!
What?
That's right. The Pearl and Marina 2-pack from Splatoon 2 is now available. Both figures are, of course, you know, very, very detailed.
Oh.
I've decided that Pearl, the light-skinned one, kind of creeps me out since she looks like she's a really, really angry 5-year-old with a sea creature on her head.
Mm.
But the Amiibo is great. She's wearing this semi-translucent crown, and she also has this really, really nice shine on her dress. As well as, like, a really nifty gradient in her hair, like, going from pink to white.
Hmm.
So, just lots of really great details on that character. Marina also has a spiffy gradient in her hair, or tentacles, whatever you want to call it, where it changes from purple to green. But, you know, on some of the tentacles, the color change is kind of abrupt. So, I would totally say that the Pearl Amiibo is better than the Marina one, even though I actually like Marina better as a character. She also got some cool details on her, you know, these silver headphones I really like, and she is totally working those squid hips. But yeah, overall, when it comes to the Amiibo, I would say, you know, Pearl is a little bit better than her partner.
Did you just say working those squid hips?
Oh yeah, you can quote me on that one.
Okay.
Of course, both characters have those nifty ink splat bases, and they are doing their funky off-the-hook poses with their hands kind of hanging down. Oh, and I haven't had a chance to actually try out their in-game functions yet, but they apparently unlock special gear in Splatoon 2, as well as a new song, and the ability to take photos with the characters. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to try that, but just visually speaking, I would say these two Amiibo are pretty darn fantastic.
Did you say special gear?
Yes, special squid-related gear, not Metal Gear.
Ah. Hmm.
Well, how about we move along and talk about a little bit of news? There isn't a ton of news to discuss this week, but there are a couple things that I felt were noteworthy. First up, the folks over at Super Limited Games have announced that they will be releasing 9 new Switch titles between now and the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and those are games that I think are, for the most part, already available in digital form, but, you know, much like limited run games, they are, you know, releasing physical editions of these games that previously were digital only.
Hmm. Any idea what they're going to be?
Yes, indeed. They have announced the entire list. The one I am most excited about is Mutant Muds Collection.
Mm.
Of course, that combines three different games, the two Mutant Muds titles, and then a Mutant Muds version of the aforementioned Bomb Monkey puzzle game. It's been, you know, reskinned for Mutant Muds Collection as a Mutant Muds title, but it's the same gameplay.
Sweet.
So that's at the top of my list. And that one, I believe, is supposed to go up for pre-order soon. It will be out in August. But then on top of that, there is Worms WMD, Knights of Pen and Paper, as well as Knights of Pen and Paper 2, Faerun Collection, Sturenden Binary Stars, N++, The Adventure Pals, and Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, which is already up for pre-order now.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, so a whole bunch of indie titles getting physical releases on Switch thanks to Super Limited Games. Most of these will be limited to 3,000 to 5,000 copies each, and in addition to the game itself, they will include trading cards and stickers. And the price for these, I believe, is $35 a piece.
That's not too bad.
No, it's not. Out of all these, do any of these entice you? I know you're more of a digital-only guy, but if you were going to get one, what do you think you would add to your collection?
I would consider the Knights of Pen and Paper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I hardly know anything about that one, but it looks cool.
Yeah, I played that on iPhone, I believe, and I actually enjoyed it. So.
Oh, cool. Good to know. The other bit of interesting Nintendo-related news I wanted to mention is that publisher Dark Horse has revealed there is a special edition of their upcoming Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild Creating a Champion art book.
Da-da-da-da!
Yeah, totally. It is called the Heroes Edition of the book, and you know, whereas the regular book, you know, by itself seems pretty darn impressive with 424 pages of behind-the-scenes material and tons of art from that fantastic game, this Heroes Edition will have an exclusive cover, a special slipcase, a cloth map, an art print of the champion's photo that Link hangs in his home at the end of the game after you complete the champion's ballad.
Nice.
I don't know if you finished that part, but it was a really, really cool scene. I love that part, and that alone is enough to maybe convince me to buy this. And then you also get a glass replica of a spirit orb.
Nice. Yeah, the banner sounds sweet. I have not completed that yet, but...
That part is cool, so please look forward to it.
I will. Are you going to pick this one up, Chris?
Well, I'd really like to. Like I said, the stuff is really cool, and I love that picture from that one part of the game. The downside, though, is it costs $100 for this thing.
$100?
$100.
100 simoleons?
I think $100 might even be worth more than 100 rupees. I'm not sure.
100 simoleons?
And the regular book is only $40, so it's like, well, you know, do I want to get the regular book? And I think it's even cheaper, you know, if you pre-order it, like, on Amazon or something, it's like $25. So it's like, $25 for the regular one, or $100 for... the Heroes Edition. I don't know, but you know, this is really, really tempting, and I do, you know, like pretty much everything included in this package. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm gonna buy it and wave that art print right over your head.
Okay, I see how it is. Well, I appreciate that.
I feel like you'd do the same.
You know I would. Anyway, that's all I had for the news this week. Why don't we move along and discuss a couple of listener letters. We didn't actually get too much in the mailbag this week, but we did get a message via Twitter from @DrFurball, who commented on our previous episode. He writes, "Just finished the episode. Wonderful stuff as usual. And I appreciated the shout out to Tetris and Dr. Mario, which was a favorite of my late grandmother and one we played a lot. It's not a compilation discussed very often, so it was nice to hear. Also, I feel like the DK Country, WarioWare, and F-Zero series are all great for multiplayer, as well as Metal Slug, which got a fun compilation on Wii."
The shout-out to Tetris and Dr. Mario for his late grandmother. You know, it's funny. Games have a way of doing that. You know, I definitely have some moments that I remember with my late mother. And, you know, same thing. It's like games can bring you closer together. So, cool to hear that.
Yeah, very, very true. And I think he had some great suggestions for you know, other great multiplayer games on various systems. Those are all good choices. Out of those, you know, Metal Slug is definitely one that I would back up the most. You know, Metal Slug Collection, like you said, on Wii, I think that combined like 6 or 7 Metal Slug games all in one cartridge, you know, and it has lots of great co-op in the vein of Contra. Yeah, that is an excellent, excellent choice. And I have to say, DK Country was also one that I considered putting on my list when we compiled that last week. I don't know why I didn't include it in the final cut, but yeah, it's also an excellent choice. Those are all good picks. So, yeah.
Yeah, for me, F-Zero probably stands out the most, and I thought about saying it last week. I think that what holds me back is I do prefer F-Zero always like as a single-player experience.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they have yet to make an F-Zero that truly is like the runaway multiplayer hit. F-Zero on N64 was close, but I just think that it still was a better single-player experience than a multiplayer.
I see. The other letter that we got came from listener Blake, and he was rather succinct and to the point, and he suggested a Power Pros milk drinking game. So his letter only included a list of what I imagine are the things that would occur on Power Pros podcast that would cause you to, you know, have to take a nice swig of milk as you are listening. Those things would be mentions of Mega Man Soccer, Pro Wrestling,
mm-hmm.
Professor Layton,
mm-hmm.
Phoenix Wright, Shantae, Amiibo, of course, and Pete saying, "How dare you?"
Do I really say that often?
You know, honestly, I thought I said it more than you did, but, you know, the listeners are probably more attentive to that sort of thing than we are.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like if you went and played that game, you would end up in the hospital.
Very possibly.
Milk overload.
Nonetheless, Blake promises he will send more milk drinking items later. Mm-hmm.
You know, I completely agree with his list, although I think that instead of saying Shantae, I think it would be Risky Boots.
Perhaps so.
Anyways, kids, don't drink milk unsupervised.
Don't end up a milk addict like Hoff.
It's true.
Thanks for sending those letters, guys. Of course, we are still accepting letters and tweets from everyone to talk about their favorite Nintendo Power moments and memories and issues and articles for an upcoming episode of the podcast. Anyway, I believe that after that, it is definitely time to take an intermission, so we shall do so, and then we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is our most wanted Nintendo TV and movie adaptations. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is our Nintendo movie and TV adaptation wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, TV and movie adaptations are not new to Nintendo. Over the year, there have been many cartoons based on various properties. You know, we've had F-Zero and Kirby cartoons. Obviously, you know, there's been the whole Pokemon phenomenon. And let us not forget the old Mario and Zelda cartoons, as well as, of course, the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie that we can't forget no matter how hard we try.
Even the Super Mario Super Show.
Right, exactly. But, you know, these days, the rules are different. These days, Nintendo is being more generous with its IPs. You know, they're partnering with Universal. There's supposedly a Mario CG movie in the works. There have been rumors floating around for a while of a Zelda Netflix series. And, of course, over in third-party land, there have also been, you know, numerous recent successes, such as the Castlevania animated series. So, in light of that, that is the focus of our big topic this week. We are discussing which Nintendo properties we would like to see adapted for the big or small screen.
It's true, and there's just a ton of places you can go with this, Chris.
Yeah, and so to make things a little more interesting, we've decided to divvy it up. We are each going to pick one game we'd like to see turned into a live-action series, one game we'd like to see turned into an animated series, and then one game we would like to see turned into a feature-length theatrical film, either animated or live action.
And we can promise that one of these will get funded and become a real thing.
Don't we wish? All right, so with all that in mind, Pete, why don't you go ahead and let me know what your choice is for a live-action TV series.
Well, you know, for this one, Chris, I kind of wanted to lean into something that stars a lot of humans, right?
Right. That makes sense to me.
You know, you maybe don't want to go with Animal Crossing. That'd just be weird.
That might be a little rough, yeah. Although, if they could get animals to talk with each other on a TV series, that would be great.
Right. It would probably end up looking more like Barney or something like that, which is fine. Just not what I was going for.
Probably not.
So this one, you know, probably seems a little nail in the head, but the first thing that really came to mind for me was Fire Emblem.
That is hilarious because that is my exact same pick as well. We did not discuss these beforehand, but yeah, we have both ended up with Fire Emblem as our pick. And obviously I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why it would lend itself well to being a televised season after season show.
Right. I mean, there's this huge, rich fantasy world and backstory to draw on there, and there are just lots of heroes and villains to get behind. And I would be lying if I didn't admit that, you know, in the back of my head, you know, thoughts of Game of Thrones weren't coming to mind and telling me, oh, you know, if they made a fantasy show like that, that had the same kind of production values, it could possibly be equally as successful. Obviously, it would be more, you know, T-rated than that show is.
Right.
But, you know, it's thoughts like that that made me think this would be perfect for TV show adaptation. You know, it's got lots of political intrigue. It's got lots of big battles. It's got lots of big dragons, you know. What more could you want?
Yeah, it's true. And then, of course, the permadeath, which in TV shows yes. is a lot easier to pull off, you know.
I suppose so. Yeah, yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, you have all those twists. Who might be knocked off next? Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, in the games, you try as hard as you can to let everyone survive. But yeah, that is a constant threat for sure.
What would be cool is if every season, you know, some couples have a child, and then in the next season, that child's now an adult. And then it just keeps going that way.
Yeah, that's something they could do. But, you know, I was thinking that, you know, maybe each season could be based off of a different game. Like, you know, you would probably want it to initially be based on the original Fire Emblem and tell the story of Marth, introduce mm-hmm. us to, you know, those characters and things of that era. And then that might last a season or two. But, you know, then after that, they can move on to a different game of the series. Like, you know, it was kind of easy for me to think, well, Awakening was kind of the one that really hit it big and sort of brought Fire Emblem back to the forefront. So I thought, well, maybe they should base it on that. But then I realized, you know, a big part of that game does involve, you know, like the time-traveling children and the fact that this character shows up who is supposed to be pretending to be Marth. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, if you're going to do that, you should probably have all the setup done first and, you know, sort of lay the groundwork with other stuff. Then when someone comes back claiming to be Marth, although it's clearly not the original Marth, you know, that actually means something to people.
Yeah, so that's true.
I was thinking, you know, start with the beginning, start with the basics. Then work your way up.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that the Beast Tribe in the game would be really cool to see on the TV show.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, lots of characters that, you know, sometimes they transform into animals, they just look like animals, you know, characters that turn into dragons. A lot of that stuff with the reproduction values could end up looking pretty awesome.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I suppose another way to go, instead of, you know, being based on the original game, they could go straight to the newest one with Fire Emblem Fates, since that one doesn't really have any ties to previous games, and it really does have, you know, both the heroes and the villains. I mean, they could, you know, you could really pick either side, you know, which one is really the good guys, which one is the bad guys, you know, depending on, you know, which game you play, you're allied with, you know, different characters that are considered the heroes. And of course, you know, there's really, you know, the other bad guys pulling the strings in the background, but, you know, having, you know, compelling heroic figures on both sides, again, could lend itself really, really well to dramatic television.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else you want to add about this one before we move on?
No, but I'm sure you could pull in some of these, you know, sort of B-list cult classic characters like Bruce Campbell or Lance Henriksen, or, you know, who also played the father of Princess Toadstool in the Super Mario Brothers movie.
I probably would not do any of that personally. I'd kind of like to, you know, keep it on the respectable and serious, but okay, that's fair enough.
I guess that's more if it had to be on, like, USA late at night.
I guess so. Hopefully that's not what we're going for. Hopefully we're going something that's a little more classy, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, you went ahead and chose the same game that I did for a live action series. So I'm glad that I had a backup candidate in mind, just so we have more to talk about here.
Oh?
And my backup pick, second to Fire Emblem, would be Earthbound.
Wow.
And, you know, part of that seems like maybe a dangerous choice. Part of it seems like kind of a risky choice and a weird choice. But, you know, I look at something like Stranger Things that, you know, has a child-based cast, and I'm thinking, you know, if you have talented child actors of that caliber, you know, they could really pull it off. And obviously, you know, the contemporary setting would make it perfect for a live-action adaptation. So I think it would work in numerous ways. And plus, it just has this whole element of weirdness and intrigue that, again, would lend itself very well to television.
Yeah, you're right. I like that one a lot. I didn't even consider Earthbound when I was putting this list together.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one that I think would, you know, persist for, you know, many, many seasons. But, you know, you could probably tell the entire game, you know, if you streamlined it, maybe even in a single season, you know, maybe two or three. But, you know, I think that, you know, if it was handled with care and with respect, they could do something really, really cool with Earthbound.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, I too had a backup.
Oh, did you?
I did. This one's a little bit more mainstream.
Okay.
It's actually a lot more mainstream, and it's kind of based off that rumor that you mentioned earlier. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing, especially if it was done with care.
Urban Champion?
pro wrestling? No. a Legend of Zelda TV series.
Aha. Yes, it is almost too obvious.
Now, the thing is, though, I think that there could be stories that are told, you know, maybe in a different perspective, or maybe it doesn't have to have Link in it necessarily as the main character all the time.
Huh.
Now, I know I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. But, you know, one thing is they don't spend a lot of time in Zelda games exploring the Ganon aspect and what's his motivation.
Yeah, I've always wanted a game like that, but they haven't really made a full game based around that yet. Just a little bit in Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, so who knows? Even something like that with a TV series could actually pay off.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to know more about Ganon's backstory. And, you know, a TV series about Ganon isn't the thing I would think of, but that is actually a pretty incredible idea now that you mention it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not going to praise you that often, so enjoy it while it lasts.
I'm patting my back right now.
Self high five. Well, I guess then I should move on to my pick for an animated series. And I think that for that, I would go with Punch-Out.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so that obviously is in the vein of, you know, all sorts of classic fighting anime and sports anime like Hajime no Ippo. And I think that this would work really, really well in, you know, this episodic format, seeing Little Mac climb through the ranks and, you know, try to overcome each opponent. And, you know, each fight would probably take an episode or two. You know, I'm sure some would be very, you know, drawn out in, you know, like, you know, almost Dragon Ball Z style, though probably not that extreme. But I think it would be a lot of fun to not only see the fight scenes and, you know, him, you know, overcoming and clobbering these opponents, but it would be really great to see how Little Mac interacts with Doc Lewis outside of the ring, you know, see him doing, you know, some training activities and other things outside the ring. You know, maybe we get to see some backstory about how Doc and Mac first met, and, you know, maybe how, you know, either of them got their start. You know, see some of Doc's past, and, you know, maybe he's got like a rival trainer out there or something like that. Plus, I'd like to see some of the outside the ring antics of some of the villains, you know, some of the opponent boxers, you know, let them be a lot more than just these cultural stereotypes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously the in-ring action, I think, would be the most important thing. And I think could look really, really spectacular in an anime form. But, you know, I would really, really like seeing just a lot more about, you know, this wonderful cast of characters.
Yeah, I like that choice a lot. I had kind of thought punch out a couple times, maybe for the live action series.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think that does work really well. And I think as you were talking about it, I was kind of imagining, it was really easy to imagine all these things kind of coming to life.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and of course, it would have King Hippo with gigantic blue nipples as an homage to Captain N, the Game Master.
Yes. Yes, of course. And, you know, I think that, especially with that, I don't know if you've seen One Punch Man, but something of,
I haven't
of,
yet.
Of that ilk, where you kind of have this, like, I mean, it is almost kind of like that, where every episode is like one fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like super exaggerated. You can almost imagine a scene where, like, Lil Mac is like woofing down food and, like, and,
yeah,
you know, Coach comes up behind him or something and scares the bejesus. I don't know. And then he probably has some sidekick characters or something, like a animal or something that's not related to the game at all, but they need it as a comedy relief. So I don't know. But I like it a lot.
All right. Cool. Thank you kindly. So what would your pick be?
Yeah, for my pick,
I'm guessing Urban Champion again.
It's actually Mega Man Soccer.
Yeah.
No.
Glug, glug, glug.
You know, Chris, one of my favorite shows on Netflix right now is Voltron. I don't know if you've seen that yet, but
I haven't, but I know of it.
Yeah, and then they kind of updated it from the 70s or 80s cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Form feet and legs, form arms and body, and all form the head.
Exactly. So in that vein, I would love to see a Star Fox animated series.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of you have the four main characters, and then, you know, they've got all sorts of other stories going on. You got Star Wolf and his clan. You've got Crystal. You've got General Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, then of course you've got Andross as the big bad. But pretty much every planet has a baddie on it. And, you know, almost every episode could be some certain mission they have to do. And, or maybe they talk about actually the people that they're saving. You know, we always hear about the Lylat system and how it needs to be saved, but you don't actually ever meet the population.
Yeah, not very often. It would be cool to, you know, travel down to these planets and see who lives there and see what they're like, you know, see more of the characters' families. I mean, obviously we know how exciting it is to have met Uncle Grippy, but, you know, I'm sure the other characters have relatives we'd like to get to know as well. You know, maybe we would get to also meet Slippy's wife and children that appeared in Star Fox Command.
That's right. So, yeah, just being able to kind of explore that universe a little bit more, I think, would be a really cool concept for an animated series that, if done right, would really pay off.
Yeah, that would work. That would definitely work. So do you want to hear about my runner-up?
I would love to.
My runner-up is Splatoon.
Ah, my runner-up is Splatoon as well.
Well, I think it's sort of an obvious pick because, you know, Splatoon is so, you know, dynamic and action-packed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously it's something new and innovative and very exciting. And just all of that, I think, adds up really, really well to something that would make for a fantastic anime.
Yeah, completely agree.
But the sad fact is that there already is a Splatoon anime, and it's not good.
No! How did we let that happen, Chris?
It's well, I mean, it is probably your fault, Pete. But the thing is that they just made a motion comic, really, based on the manga. It's not a from-the-ground-up anime, so instead of being, you know, full of action excitement, it's full of basically still frames, which is like the opposite of what you want out of Splatoon. So that probably, possibly could be my number one pick, except for the fact that, you know, there there already is one. And that's the reason it was not my pick. But yeah, I would love to see a real Splatoon anime, you know, where the characters are, you know, just exciting and dynamic and has lots of shoot 'em up action, and also delves into the Splatoon lore. You know, there's so much backstory that they hint at in the game, and I'd love to see, you know, that in, you know, living, breathing action and color with these flashback scenes, you know, in parallel with, you know, the current day battles that are going on. I think they could do cool stuff with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you watched the Troll Hunter series on Netflix at all?
No, I don't know anything about that.
So that's created by DreamWorks, the same guys that did, you know, How to Train Your Dragon and all that.
And Shrek.
It's also done in conjunction with Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, it's a really cool kid show, and I love watching it. I think the story's great. It's got, you know, some really good voice acting. It's not an anime, per se, but it is done in 3D.
Yeah, as you'd expect from a DreamWorks production.
Yeah, almost like using the in-game engine to allow the characters to kind of sink into the ink and, you know, shoot globs of paint everywhere. I just think there's something about that, even aesthetically in a TV show, would be super cool.
Well, I guess that's where we differ. I mean, personally, I would much prefer it to be, you know, hand-drawn animation where they can do, like, you know, some really crazy, exaggerated animations. But, you know, that would probably work too.
You know, I used to not ever like 3D stuff, but I feel like they have come a long way recently. So, I don't know. If it helps me get a Splatoon show faster, I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, they already gave us one fast, and that didn't pan out. So, hopefully, they give us a real Splatoon anime or CG series sooner rather than later, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, then. I guess that brings us to our movie pick. And Pete, I think I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you for what your choice is.
Now, I feel like I've mentioned this on another show, but I can't remember which episode it was.
Okay.
But I feel like this is a little bit of a dark horse. But I'm going to say, again, in the vein of DreamWorks and CG, I'm going to say I would love to see them handle the license for Donkey Kong.
Oh, huh. Interesting. So it would basically be like Donkey Kong and the Crystal Coconut again?
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful. I'm going to go jump off a bridge.
No, what is Donkey Kong and the Crystal Coconut? You've told me about this before.
It's a CG series, you know, based on the DK Country games, and it's atrocious. Watch it sometime with a lot of milk.
No, Chris, absolutely not. The Crystal Coconut is the example of what not to do. In fact, if I went into a meeting with people to talk about this, I would actually say steer away from this. But no, I think Donkey Kong just lends itself really well to an animated movie because here you have these characters that are almost always in 3D. I don't think there's been a flat Donkey Kong game since, I mean, even the Super Nintendo versions were, you know, CG looking.
Well, I guess the Mario versus Donkey Kong series had, you know, more traditional sprite-based Donkey Kong characters.
That's true, but I don't count that because he's got a little wind-up thing on his back.
Well, the real Donkey Kong is in there, but, you know, good point. Point taken.
But yeah, so you'd have Donkey Kong, you'd have a jungle setting. Perhaps it's when, you know, the polar animals are taking over and there's a tropical freeze. Perhaps it's a whole new storyline. But, you know, the music's there, the characters are there.
Well, I have an important question for you.
Sure.
Would Donkey Kong talk? Would the characters speak?
You know, I think you'd kind of have to allow it. I think you'd have to.
Okay, well, I was wondering, I mean, you know, they don't really tend to talk in the games. When they talked in Crystal Coconut, it was a horrible tragedy for all of mankind. But I thought, you know, maybe you would do a different route, you know. Maybe, you know, some other characters that we're not familiar with have come up into this setting, and maybe they do all the talking while, you know, Donkey Kong and the DK crew, you know, just tend to talk in monkey speak. I don't know.
Nah, I think you have to allow some form of talking. I mean, obviously, Donkey Kong is probably a character of little to no words, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator style. But at the same time,
he's going to be terminating people, huh?
No. But, you know, it probably did.
Would Donkey Kong ever request to take somebody's boots and clothes and motorcycle?
It's possible.
Because I could get behind that.
Could you imagine that scene?
This is sounding pretty cool now.
See, I know this sounds a little ridiculous, but you got to go with me and you just got to imagine what that would be like if they could really pull off an awesome Donkey Kong Country movie. Just imagine it, Chris. Just close your eyes and just imagine, you know, Donkey Kong swinging through a jungle and Diddy Kong just squealing behind him and...
The coconut gun firing in spurts.
This is getting weird.
How would you incorporate the DK rap into this movie?
I mean, it would probably either begin or end with that.
I feel like it should be probably an Easter egg, you know, like halfway through the end credits.
Nah, I feel like it should be right at the end. You know, like you know how like Shrek always ends on like a song? Hopefully it's not by Smash Mouth, though.
Well, if you say so.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
Now, what about casting? Do you have any ideas who you might want to cast for Donkey Kong's voice?
You know, Donkey Kong would probably have to be somebody fairly baritone, right?
Yes, I would think so.
So you could imagine somebody like a Idris Elba or a Vin Diesel or something.
Interesting. Yep, obviously, Vin Diesel has done some voice work.
Yeah, it's funny because you these days they're letting anybody do voice work, and it turns out to be, you can't even recognize it. Like Bradley Cooper is Rocket Raccoon. How'd that happen? But I would say maybe we get James Earl Jones to do Cranky Kong.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe we get Sean Penn to do Funky Kong.
I was kind of hoping you could get me to do Cranky Kong, you know? Damn kids! You have to hold down the reset button when you turn off the power, or your game is going to get erased!
Amazing.
So, do you have any other ideas about how the story for a Donkey Kong movie could play out?
So, one idea is they could absolutely have this, like, kid wash ashore Donkey Kong Island. And, probably this, like, chubby little kid was on a cruise ship and fell off.
Yeah, I could see him, you know, like trying to survive and, you know, trying to get some food, and he starts munching on bananas, and you know, before he know it, he's like, you know, eating all of DK's banana hoard.
Right. And so maybe he sort of is the the protagonist in a way where he kind of moves the plot along, and maybe there's like some evil villain that for some reason wants to kill the kid, or perhaps he's just caught in the middle of a dispute between Donkey Kong and the Kongs and the bad guy.
Well, I like the idea of, you know, maybe the Kongs trying to help, you know, reunite him with his family or something like that. I kind of feel like, you know, humans, you know, sort of being the conduit, like the eyepiece into this world would be good. And also maybe they're also the villains, you know, maybe, you know, it's this unexplored island. And like, oh, you know, here's some rich guys who want to, you know, basically, you know, colonize, for lack of a better word, this this lush paradise, and, you know, turn it into a tourist resort or something. And, obviously the kid and his parents would obviously have, you know, some sort of way to help the Kongs fight back against the evil land developers.
Yeah, maybe it turns out that his parents are rich and they turn the island into a park or something.
Well, they don't want to turn it into a park. They want to keep it, you know, as is.
I mean,
right?
A national park that no one can...
Sure.
A pristine, untouched island.
Yeah. But, you know, along those lines, you know, it's not like I'm trying to, you know, contradict your, CG Donkey Kong plan, but I was thinking, you know, what if they took a tactic out of, like, Detective Pikachu or apparently this upcoming Sonic movie where they, you know, combine live action with CG. So maybe this kid is actually a real actor, or maybe, you know, instead of going the kid route, you know, it's like, you know, a couple of explorers, you know, they've heard of some, you know, legendary, you know, missing link on some, you know, hidden island somewhere. And so we have like these comical, you know, explorers coming out to try to see what's going on. And they're the ones that do all the talking. So instead of, you know, DK speaking and doing exposition and having the weirdness of talking gorillas, you know, we have, you know, these human comedians who are able to do all that. And meanwhile, you know, the Kongs are doing all this crazy stuff all around them, you know, whether it's, you know, Diddy on his jetpack or, you know, Cranky on a pogo stick and, you know, who's this girl flying around with her ponytail and stuff like that. Just all this really, you know, silly kind of stuff that Donkey Kong lends itself to.
Yeah, I definitely feel like Seth Rogen would be one of the explorers. And maybe like Jonah Hill or something, or Michael Cera. I don't know.
I was thinking it should definitely be a male-female pair for the explorers, but those are definitely some good picks, yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's a jeweled banana that they're really after, and turns out it's Donkey Kong's like most prized possession.
again, I'm telling you, no good things can come from crystallized fruit. It's bad all around.
Yeah, I watched like 2 seconds of that and decided that it's not worth ever viewing.
That is the correct assessment.
I saw a Donkey Kong standing full upright position with the worst animation I've ever seen. So yep. That is not what I'm envisioning for this. I want something, you know, that really is heartwarming. You know, imagine Up, but with Donkey Kong. And there we are.
Sure, Up with more gorillas. Sounds good to me.
Regardless, whether you agree or disagree, I truly think that Donkey Kong could lend itself really well to, especially, I don't want Nintendo to really handle this, and I hate to say it like that, but I want somebody who knows.
Well, they're not a movie company.
I want somebody who knows what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like DreamWorks really nailed it with How to Train Your Dragon, and I think doing something in that, you know, wheelhouse, I think would just be really cool to see and would prove a validity with a franchise that isn't front and center always in the Nintendo universe. So you start with something like that, and then you prove that that's amazing, and then sky's the limit with Mario and Zelda and anything else you want to do.
Okay, interesting, very interesting. But, you know, you're right. You know, DreamWorks, they obviously, you know, do a lot with CG and comedy, and I think that's the kind of movie you'd obviously want this to be. So it does kind of seem like a very, very good fit in that regard.
What about you, Chris? What do you got?
Well, I am going to go with Metroid.
Oh, my, my, my.
And honestly, I think this could work either in a live-action format or in an animated format. You know, obviously, this is one that there have been rumors about a Metroid movie for years and years, like I think for more than a decade probably. But it's a story that I think would work really, really well in a two-hour movie format.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, plus, you know, the main theme behind it is sort of, you know, classic humans versus aliens in an action movie. And I think that kind of thing, you know, is obviously led to great films in the past, and I think it could lead to great things with the Metroid license.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, I think that would be the thing to focus on. You know, don't worry about Samus's past. Don't worry about, oh, the baby. Just focus on Samus looking cool and kicking butt.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, one thing that's happened in cinema in the last 10 years that didn't exist before that.
What's that?
It's, you know, in Iron Man, you'll see a lot of times they'll cut to a shot of, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s face.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's kind of looking around his helmet.
Right.
You know, that would...
How they fit the camera in that little helmet, I never understood.
That would be the perfect mechanic to use in a Metroid movie.
It would. That would make a lot of sense. But still, I don't think I would make Samus be quite as solitary in the movie as she is in the games. I feel like you'd need to have some sort of compelling support characters there, you know, people for her to talk to and converse with, people who could maybe be supporting her with information by radio, and most importantly, people that could actually, you know, feel the threat of the space pirates or the Metroids or, you know, whatever the villain is. You know, Samus is obviously super badass. She's up to any challenge. But, you know, these other people who, you know, maybe they're survivors that she found, you know, that had previously been exploring planet Zebes, or maybe, you know, the movie is set in a space station and they, you know, just happened to be part of the crew that, you know, wasn't killed off yet. But, you know, they should be there and sort of, you know, you want to like those characters. Like, oh, are they going to make it or are they going to, you know, end up as alien fodder? So I think they would be a very important part of the story.
Basically the red shirts.
Well, I guess, potentially. I mean, they're not there just as fodder. They're there because, you know, you want to like these characters. You know, there'd be a cute little dog. You know, right. You don't want the little dog to get eaten by a Metroid, but it might happen. So,
or Ridley.
Yeah, so you want someone in there for her to defend. So I'm not saying, like, make a... you necessarily beat-by-beat adaptation of any of the Metroid games. I mean, I can see it being a story like, oh, you know, there's some science crew that is, you know, working with some life form or something, and, you know, that turns out to be the Metroid, and, you know, then something happened, the space pirates attacked, and so it would, you know, maybe be, you know, taking some inspiration from the beginning of Super Metroid, you know, when they attack and kill everybody off there, but then expand on it from there. So there's survivors, there's the space pirates going after the Metroid, there's Samus going after the Metroid, and all just ties together, whether it's on Zebes or it's on a space station or it's on some giant spacecraft. I think that would be a way to do it, rather than having her just go through, now I'm in Kraid's lair, now I'm in Ridley's lair, now I'm in the fire area. I mean, obviously you work all that stuff in some way, but I think that just trying to keep it very simple, I've got to complete my objectives and find this mysterious life form they're working on here, would probably be the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. I would almost like to see them explore the Chozo a little bit more.
Huh.
And kind of the whole story behind that. But I understand what you're saying. I think the Chozo are a really cool concept, and I'd like to see that explored a bit too.
It would be good to touch on a little bit, that's for sure. But again, I think focusing on action rather than delving into these characters' backstories that ultimately are not that important, I think would be a good way to go. I mean, I'm not even sure that Ridley would necessarily need to be there. I mean, I'd love to see Ridley worked in, but I don't think there really has to be like the Mother Brain even. I would probably think of some of the other Metroid games where the final boss, so to speak, is like the Omega Metroid or something like that. I mean, it is called Metroid. Metroid is this scary parasitic life form, so it makes sense that like super powerful Metroid, like in those other games, is the ultimate threat. But, you have the space pirates, you have Ridley, they're going after it, so they're all in there too. So I think all that stuff could come together and be an excellent movie.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't want to see Ridley in the movie, but instead put her in after the credits. Some obvious nod to the fact that Ridley will be in the sequel.
Oh, yeah, that'd actually be really, really cool. I like that. I like it a lot.
We'll make it happen then.
Okay, I'll get right on that. Yeah, I think something like that could turn out really cool, whether it was done animated or whether it was done live action.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick live action.
I'd love to see it done live action. It's just a matter, could they really pull it off and make it look good? And, who would you cast to play Samus? I'm not very good with actors or casting or things like that, but obviously that would come down to being a very important part of the film.
If I had to pick somebody off the top of my head, maybe like a Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice. That's not a bad choice at all.
Yeah, just because she has that kind of edge. She's a little young and could be a cool Samus.
Sounds like a solid pick to me. Yeah. Well, any runner-ups or anything you want to discuss?
The one runner-up I had, now that you mention it, I kept thinking animated style movie, especially in the vein of like kids movies.
Okay.
Because those just make so much money these days.
That's true.
And I'd like to see this, work out well for Nintendo. So I would actually love to see a Mario Odyssey CG movie.
Ah, okay. Well, we know there is a Mario CG movie in the works. Don't know what it's about.
Yeah, I feel like Odyssey is kind of the right style for it, especially given, just the comical nature of being able to transform into different things, and it gets a way to put a dinosaur in the movie. And
yes, I guess any movie that has a T-Rex with a mustache on it, can't be all bad.
Well, that and Cappy would be such a great comic relief character. Of course, then you also have New Donk City and you have that whole dynamic.
Yep. A big fan of Pauline.
Yep. Pauline and all that. Anyways, I just think, and then maybe you explore a little bit why it's called New Donk City, and maybe that's the crossover Donkey Kong movie.
You're just all about the gorillas, aren't you?
Couldn't help it.
Yeah, I didn't really have much of a runner-up for my movie pick, but the one thing that did come to mind, even though it's third party, was like a live-action No More Heroes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty great.
I mean, it almost feels like it was made for live action to begin with. And in some ways, I feel like Scott Pilgrim versus the World was a live action proof of concept for No More Heroes. And I'm like, well, that worked pretty well. So why not just, up the ante, make it more crazy and over the top and R-rated and have a No More Heroes flick as well. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like Kill Bill meets Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe there'll be a chance if the next No More Heroes game is a huge smashing success.
That's right.
Well, I think that does it for this week's big topic, so I suppose it is time that we wrap up this episode of the show.
Not quite yet, though, Chris.
Oh, you think we have time for one more thing?
I know we do.
Okay. All right. In that case, I guess we should make a moment for a new dramatic reading. This one will be from Nintendo Power Issue 4. It'll be an article all about the PlayChoice 10. Imagine an arcade machine packed with 10 of the hottest new games all at once. Well, Power players, you don't have to dream about it. Just look for Nintendo's PlayChoice system in convenience stores and arcades near you. The PlayChoice system is a veritable video jukebox. After popping your quarter or token into the machine, hit the reset button and select your new game. The only difference between PlayChoice 10 and a jukebox is that you're selecting video games instead of songs. You actually own the machine from the time your quarter slides down the slot until your time runs out. The PlayChoice system has a great deal to offer. If you put multiple quarters or tokens in at a time, you receive a bonus. For instance, each quarter or token will give you 300 time units. By putting two in at the same time, you will receive an additional 150 units for a total of 750 units.
Thanks for the math.
The PlayChoice system has up to 10 great games to select from. Check the game menu often for fresh selections. On the PlayChoice system, you can expect to find detailed graphics and a helpful stop-action feature, plus the excitement and versatility of ever-changing game menus. Five new games now out on PlayChoice systems are Contra, Double Dragon, Super Mario Bros. 2, Punch-Out, and Gauntlet. And, for the really big news, begin looking for Super Mario Bros. 3 in the spring of 1989. Be on the lookout for PlayChoice. It's the only choice.
Boy, do I wish the spring of 1989 was coming up.
Yeah, please look forward to that. That'll be really, really big. The funny thing about this article is that it was printed in, you know, that fourth issue of Nintendo Power, which came out at like either the end of 88 or the beginning of 1989. And by then, the PlayChoice had already been out for like, you know, 2 or 3 years. I think it came out like in 1986. Yet they're having this article here acting like it's some brand new thing.
Well, that was kind of the way the world worked before the internet.
Yeah, I guess if you don't know about it, it's new to you.
Right. I mean, who am I to tell you that doesn't exist?
But, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, about the writer of this. You know, they're very excited about this thought of, you know, putting tokens in for these time units and getting to choose from 10 games. You know, I would love to have this guy travel through time and see that without putting tokens in, you can have an NES system with 30 games on it. Can you imagine? His head would probably explode.
That's unlimited time units, sir.
It is. Unlimited time units and one dude with an exploded head.
That's pretty crazy. It's kind of unbelievable now when you look back and think about, like, reading that.
Yeah, those were definitely different times. Long, long ago.
Good choice of games, by the way.
I guess that's true. Can't fault him for that. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, of course, it would be great if you told your friends about us or left us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Bashad,
the source for Nintendo players straight from the pros,
and our scaly friend, Kid Cobra,
Cobra,
we will see you next time.